living life as beautifully as you can doesn't have to cost the earth, you know, it doesn't have to mean spending lots of money. But yes, I'm all for sort of just encouraging people to have a go, try their hand at things, and try and make life pretty.
Welcome to Houseguest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor of Country and Townhouse magazine. My house guest today is Paula Sutton, who I discovered on Instagram. Her Hill House vintage posts and stories depicting life in the country with her family and beloved pooch, Lady Dashwood. A Bridgerton addict, she delights with her vintage finds and decorating ideas. Life in the country has definitely been more than she bargained for. Today, I am very happily ensconced on a sofa with Paula Sutton, who is an author, broadcaster, and writer. Paula has a fantastically successful Instagram and blog called Hill House Vintage, which I've been following you for years, and I think I bumped into you actually at Chelsea Flower Show with those awful moments where, of course, I know you so well. I'm like, hi, Paul. And you kind of did that very charming, who on earth is this? But very kindly said hello. And we're sitting here in your fantastically beautiful house in Norfolk, which obviously I now want to go and, redecorate because it's just charming and lovely. And you have done so much in the last year, not least launched your absolute jam sandwich of a novel, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. But anyway, let's start at the beginning. Paula, welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
And we've got Lady Dashwood.
Oh, we have.
Who's Susan. a very big part of not only your Instagram, but obviously your life. Mm. So really, life changed for you. You worked at a model agency, Premier. Yeah.
I worked, so after university, I did a degree in town and country planning with architecture. And I realised within the first term that I was not going to become a town and country planner. But I wanted to finish my degree because I was a good girl in that way. But I always had a love of fashion and fashion magazines, and also interiors, actually. And before I chose my degree, I remember wanting to study or thinking about studying interior design. And my parents saying, but that's not a real job. You can't study interior. How do you study interior design? You just decorate a room. And so I went on to do a degree that was sort of a conventional degree. But I knew that I wanted to work in something creative. So either interiors or fashion. And I ended up going and working at, first of all, doing work experience for Elite Premier Model Agency. It was at the time. And they represented all the supermodels. So they had Naomi Campbell and Linda Evangelista and Christy Turlington. And it was in that perfect moment of all the fabulous Amazonian, amazing supermodels. And I did work experience and then I got taken on in the press office and had a permanent job there. And it was just the most wild and amazing and fabulous start to a career, totally unexpected, because I'd been looking at these magazines and seeing these amazing women on the covers, not thinking that I'd soon be doing interviews for them and being their mouthpiece for magazines in the UK. And it was a brilliant, brilliant moment. I eventually ended up in magazines myself. Before we moved to Norfolk, I ended up at Elle magazine.
And writing about interiors or styling?
No. That I was the bookings director, so I was basically organising all of the shoots. So I was more production. It was always, my whole career was always about, in London, was always about the nuts and bolts of helping other people's creative endeavours and making other people's vision come to life, which is so interesting that I came to Norfolk and did exactly the opposite. It was all about me and how, and my vision and what I saw as being creative. But yes, in London, it was all about me producing other people. I was booking the photographers and the makeup and the locations and putting the nuts and bolts together. But I always had that creative spark inside me thinking, you know, I'd help create a shoot, obviously with the fashion director or the fashion editors. And there'd be times when secretly I'd think, well, I wouldn't do that. I would choose that, or I would have chosen that, or I'd have done this. And, you know, and it was a wonderful time again, but it was definitely a period where I felt I need to be on the creative side. You know, I was in a creative team, which was amazing, wonderful people, but I didn't have the last say in what appeared on the magazine or what appeared in print.
And then why Norfolk?
So when I first met my husband, which was actually on the first day of university, but his parents lived in Richmond, in Ham Common. And very shortly after we moved in, they thought, great, we've got rid of him. We're going to move somewhere else. They're originally from Derbyshire, but they moved to Norfolk based on a house, a Georgian house, literally around the corner from here, and lovely land because they had several dogs. And we used to spend our weekends coming up and basically using them as a country house hotel. And it was just wonderful. We'd leave the M25 and suddenly we'd have this calming feeling and be driving up the M11 and the A11 and just thinking, oh goodness me, how wonderful and beautiful and sort of just calming this whole area was. It was also a lot cheaper than the Cotswolds or many other sort of like lovely areas in England. So when we decided we needed to make a change, Norfolk just sprung to mind because we had all these memories. My in-laws had long since left and moved somewhere else, but we had all these wonderful memories of driving up to Norfolk. And also we married here when they were still here. So we married in a little village with a little country church. And so we had this sort of romantic image of Norfolk that I wanted to recapture for my children.
So you found the house and then you started decorating the house. And were you going to car boot sales and that kind of thing in order to find things for your house?
Absolutely. It all started off with moving here, spending all our money buying the house, and then finding that we had rooms to fill. And so I had to find inventive ways of sort of mixing what we had with beautiful pieces of furniture that was solid and nothing. I didn't want anything throwaway. I wanted things that were sort of felt sizable and solid and could really fit the space and were also in keeping with the, not so much the age of the house, because it's a Regency house. So I didn't necessarily want Regency furniture, although I'd love Regency furniture, but I didn't have the money to spend on those sorts of antiques. But something that was sort of had an air of the past to it. So the best way of doing that was going to sort of vintage shops and going to car boot sales and going to, you know, those sort of like dusty old curiosity shops and the sort of old fashioned antique shops where things, you know, you can get something that's a prize and an amazing piece for not a huge amount of money. So it all started with me trying to fill the house beautifully and trying to decorate the house beautifully. And then inevitably you start filling rooms and seeing things that would be perfect in the room, but there's no space. And so I thought, oh my goodness, somebody else is going to love that. If I love that, somebody else will love that. How can I make this work? So I started selling and trading online, first of all, because I was buying things on sort of websites like eBay and you know and the such. And then I got myself a stall at a local vintage emporium, which was just the time of my life. It was that's when I fully became Hill House Vintage.
Yeah. And is that when you started the Instagram?
I started the blog first. So my blog was the Hill House Diaries. So the house is Hill House. So my blog was the Hill House Diaries. And that was meant to be just a diary of a South London girl who had come to live in the Norfolk countryside and suddenly would wake up to the smell of manure on the fields opposite and all of these sorts of new things that I was experiencing, and also it was documenting me furnishing the house. And then the blog turned into Instagram because Instagram suddenly became a thing. I think I joined Instagram in 2013. I used to look at Instagram and think, well, that's not for me. I'm seeing people showing their breakfast and their coffee, and you know, that's not what I do. And then the first person I saw was a lady I used to work with years ago, Charlotte Ann Fiddler, and she was showing her beautiful house in Wiltshire. And she's got the most stunning garden. And I thought, oh gosh, if she's showing her garden and her lovely interiors, then maybe that's a thing on Instagram. So I started doing the same and building up a community of people who were interiors lovers.
But also, I mean, for anyone that's never seen it, it's also very much about you and the way you dress. Mm. And Lady Dashwood is often in there. And there's quite a lot of cake.
Oh, which yes. Was
which obviously I love. So, I mean, has that always been sort of that natural instinct within you for, it's just a sort of innate style, I think, of knowing how things should look?
Do you know, I always trace it back to my parents before they lived in England for 30 years and then they left to go back to the Caribbean and they came back on and off. But the last home I had with my parents was a large Edwardian home in sort of the South London suburbs. So it had a beautiful garden around it. It had an acre of garden around it. And it was a really lovely house. And my father had a vegetable patch. My mother would bake cakes. And then when they left, I was totally bereft. I was sort of, oh my goodness, you know, I've had this lovely, beautiful upbringing. And now they've gone to the Caribbean, which is beautiful in itself, but it was a very different style. And I think I've tried to recapture and recreate the home I left ever since. And my mother used to love poring through country magazines and looking at the beautiful houses. And the next move they would have made would have been deeper into the English countryside. And I think I've just taken off from where they left off. And I think when we left London, I wanted, it was mainly to do with the fact that I was so overwhelmed with my career and my three children at one point, that I had three under three. And I felt that I was missing out on their childhood. So when we moved, I wanted to create this childhood and this home that one I remembered. And I probably had added up, bulked up the fantasy, because of course your memory always sort of picks out the nice bits, doesn't it? So I think I'd made it perhaps a bit more sort of perfect than maybe it was, but I wanted to recreate that sort of feel for my children. And that included being the sort of mother who baked cakes and always had a something lovely smelling in the kitchen when they came home from school. And that's what I did. Before coming here, I used to bake cakes from a box. You know, I used to go and get that sort of box full of 12 cupcakes. And when I arrived in Norfolk, I thought, no, I'm going to use this kitchen. I'm going to use this oven. I'm going to learn to bake from scratch. And I was determined to do that. So the lifestyle came first, and then the imagery and the photographs came afterwards, because that's really what was happening. It was all very genuine. I'd make these crazy cakes and I think, well, that looks hilarious, because it looks, you know, nothing I do is ever perfect or particularly skilled, but they are quite interesting in a photograph. So I would take photographs of them.
Yeah. But I think that's, you know, that's part of the charm, is that it doesn't look too much like a film set. You know, it is you and your family and the dog and all those lovely things. And then, of course, the next exciting chapter is the Potting Shed Murder.
Yes, my goodness.
So I am a massive Agatha Christie fan.
Yes, me too. So to
have this kind of cottagecore thriller. So you've had so many lovely things said about it, one of which was called it a quintessentially English murder mystery. Paula Sutton brings a new voice for the cosy genre with her fresh take and witty twist on modern village life. Mm. Now, what I want to know, because I'm halfway through, are you Daphne Brewster?
Dun, dun, dun. Daphne Brewster is a version of me.
Yeah.
15 years ago. So we moved here to Hill House 15 years ago. And I would say she's a bit younger. I moved when I was 40. And I would say Daphne is perhaps maybe 5 years younger than I was when I moved, but a very similar person. I'm not as nosy as Daphne.
What I absolutely love is the way that you have put the characters and you set the scene so richly to start with, and it's almost, I can imagine that the way that you sort of set the scene, set the furniture in your house, or decide how you're going to display things, there's so much in the background before, you know, what actually happens goes about. And I think it just occurred to me that there was this kind of wonderful sort of circularity in what's happening in the book as kind of what's happening in your world.
Well, it's certainly so much is drawn from real experience. You know, the characters, they're not real characters necessarily, but they are all an amalgamation of lots of characters that I've met along the way. Because that's a diplomatic way of putting it.
Yeah.
But certainly a lot of the quirks and mannerisms and even some of the little scenes are things that have happened, not necessarily always in Norfolk, but through my life, I've met people who remind me of the characters in the book, which has been fun writing. And of course, you know, it's very important to say that not one character is any one person, but so much of it is drawn from life. But I do remember when I used to love English literature classes when I was at school. And I remember being told that so many authors draw from their real life. And that's, you know, the strongest story you can have is your real life. And so that always stayed with me. And it sort of made the writing process feel very solid, because I could imagine these things happening, and I can imagine, apart from the murder. I must reiterate, I've not come across a murder, and I hope I never do. But, you know, it was important to be able to imagine sitting in a room on a certain sofa, or having coffee with that person. Yes, so I'd have sort of my evenings writing, and I'd be chuckling away because I could really imagine being with that person or being with that character, and what they would say and how they would look, and even, you know, what they would offer me to drink, or, you know, it's...
And did you feel like you always had a book in you, or how did it... Because it's all very well thinking about writing a book and saying to yourself, oh, I'll do it one day, but actually sitting down and doing it. I mean, do you write longhand or did you type?
I typed. I've always felt I've had a book in me. And in actual fact, I submitted the first three chapters of a completely different book when I was in my late 20s. It was at a time when there were lots of female protagonists, and people called it chick lit, which I think is a very awful way of describing it. It was just women who wrote very well, actually, you know, and very interesting, funny, often funny stories. And so at that time, I remember being really into, I think it was Lisa Jewell, who is a brilliant writer. And I remember looking at the back of it, it was either hers or somebody else's book, and thinking, gosh, there's all these people involved in getting this book published. And it was when I was sort of learning that you had a publisher and you had maybe a literary agent. And I found a literary agent on the back of one of these books. And I thought, I'm just going to send my first three chapters off. And it was a rom-com sort of love story set in a model agency. There's a pattern here. And amazingly, he replied and said, you know, not bad for your first effort, but you need to, and he gave me a list of things to do. And he said, maybe, you know, send it back in a few years' time when you're a bit better at writing. And because I was quite young, I just saw that as a complete rejection. I mean, it was an amazing thing for someone to say, not bad, here's some pointers, do send it back. Doesn't matter how long, you know, send it back when you've done a bit more.
Yeah.
But I had had to be very bold to send it out in the first place. So to get a letter and be told, you know, not bad, but all I saw was the but. All I saw was the, you know, not good enough. And so I sort of hid away from the idea of writing for many years afterwards. But I still felt that I would love to one day. I mean, I used to be a voracious reader. I have to say, social media has addled my brain a bit. But I used to just, you know, read every evening several books, and you know, it was such a wonderful pastime, as I say, before the phone sort of took hold of me. And I always felt I had a book in me. So my first actual book was Hill House Living, which was a lifestyle book, and there was a little bit of sort of autobiography in there, but mainly it was sort of to do with my blog. So it was recipes and tips on how to restore furniture and how to style and living with the seasons. But I knew even when I was writing that one that I had stories in me. So yes, when the opportunity came, I thought that everyone would think I was crazy when I suggested doing it. But I was amazed when everyone said, brilliant idea, it makes sense. Yeah. You know, I didn't know if it would make sense to people. It makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if it would make sense to other people. So I'm so happy that it's been received so well, because it could have been one of my craziest decisions.
And are you already writing number two?
I am indeed, yes. The Body in the Kitchen Garden.
Can't wait. And do you have time to restore furniture? And, you know, is that still an important part of what you do? Or is your writing your kind of restorative, sort of in your own time kind of thing?
My writing has become a bigger part of my life now. But also when I'm trying to feel calm and sort of settle my mind, I tend to go towards my garden more. So once again, I'm not a fantastic gardener by any means, but I'm learning as I go along, and my garden brings me a lot of peace. So I think I used to restore the furniture and paint furniture, and that used to give me a sort of, it was very mindful, and it was almost like meditation. And that has been, and now my house is full. You know, there's not much I can do to add to it, although, you know, every so often you see a piece that you can't ignore. But now I'm getting to grips with my garden and learning how to keep things alive.
How do you think, if you'd stayed in London, how do you think your life would have, what direction it would have gone in?
I was always interested in interiors. So I know that, and as I say, when I was thinking of degree courses, one of the ones that came up was the idea of being in, you know, studying interior design. And I do remember my house in London before we moved here was a Victorian terrace house, you know, it was a beautiful, lovely house. And I really enjoyed, we knocked through and made a lovely sort of kitchen dining area. We did the attic into the children's space. And I really enjoyed that. I think I would certainly, because Instagram would have come along, I would certainly have explored sharing, you know, the design process and what I did in on Instagram with the house I had then, I'm sure. But whether I would have started restoring furniture, although I was starting to buy vintage even then for the house, I'm not sure what would have happened. I mean, I certainly would have stayed in London. I would have remained in a full-time career, I'd imagine. And if I had done that, then time for writing, I don't know if that would have played a part in my life. I'd like to think it would, but gosh, like, you know, life is so busy when you're working full-time in London and living that London life. It's very high octane, isn't it?
Yeah. And what about your own personal style? I mean, you always look immaculate in fantastic dresses with, you know, usually colour and just, but also, I mean, I, you know, stuff that I think some of them are day, some of them you've got one or two day dress, which is
Gabby
Deeming, who was at House and Garden magazine and now has gone and done her own thing. But quite a lot of other, you know, I sort of pride myself on going, oh yes, that's a so-and-so. Oh yes, she's wearing a so-and-so. But actually so much of you, what you wear, it's slightly annoying because I can't place it. So do you feel now that you have to sort of, you know, when you go out, you have to look a certain way?
That's such an interesting question, because I now, when I walk through King's Cross or I walk through London, I'm inevitably sort of, somebody will grab me and say, well, are you Hillhouse Vintage? And I think it's usually because of how I dress.
Yeah.
And so it has become a signature style of mine, where it is slightly eccentric and slightly, you know, big skirts and, you know, there's always an air of the past, I like to think, about how I dress. And it is very colourful and it is quite flamboyant and it is quite, I wouldn't go as far as saying crazy, but I think I can look eccentric sometimes, which I love. I find that fine. I'm all for that. But yes, I think I have become the persona that started off perhaps being a little bit flamboyant in photographs, and it's sort of the two things have merged and it's completely me. But I enjoy that. I've always had a bit of a peacock about me. And working in a fashion magazine, it was always about the fashion. I had a slightly more streamlined 1950s style back in the days when I worked for a fashion magazine. Whereas now it's sort of like, goodness me, one day I'll be sort of like a Regency Bridgerton character and the next day I'll be something from the 1950s with the big full skirt. But I have a lot of fun with my clothes.
Yeah.
And I have lost any shyness I used to have about standing out. So now it's sort of like, oh yes, I'm all sort of like, you know, full on Hillhouse Vintage.
And do you think that, do you know sort of demographics of your followers, or, I mean, are people coming to you because of the, you know, the furniture, or is it you, or is it the food? Do you know, do you ever meet your kind of followers, for want of a better word?
I do. I have a lot of American followers as well, actually. I think they come for this different take on a quintessentially sort of English style. I always joke that I'm more English in America than anywhere else.
Oh, really? Do you travel over there and have you promoted the book, or are you promoting the book?
I will be. They've got a different publishing date and different publisher, but that will happen next year.
So that's
really exciting, because I have quite a big following over there, which is fascinating, you know, totally unexpected. But I think that it's escapism in many ways. I try not to make, you know, nothing is pretend. So if I do a tablescape in the garden, it's because we're eating out there.
Okay.
It won't necessarily be exactly what's on that table, but we are actually doing something out there. So yesterday my son, his girlfriend, it was her 21st birthday over the weekend. And so, you know, I was setting a table and we were doing something out there. So there is, you know, it's real as well as the sort of fantasy element to it as well. So I think that people sort of follow really for the entire thing. It's the big picture. It's the big fantasy picture, I think.
Yeah. But I think that's what comes across. And actually, I think if you're not, you know, there's so much that you look at which is not real, that actually that's what's so lovely about it. And also it's not done in a very kind of, oh, look at me. Or, you know, it's very humble, really, in a way. And I think that's what's so nice about it. So what else? I mean, as you're obviously enormously busy, but are there other things that excite you? Are you musical?
She says,
looking at a trombone. Yeah. Was it a French horn?
Yeah, French horn. No one plays that one. Okay. No one plays that. I am a bad pianist, but I play the piano. And I love the piano. Love listening to my jazz music. And you know, this particular room that we're in here is the sort of non-television room. So where we come in here to listen to our old-fashioned record player. And
good old Nina Simone.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, listening to music relaxes me. And I'm now suddenly, I used to like painting. I did art A-level and then it stopped. So I used to like painting was actually when I was a kid. But I'm starting to try my hand at watercolours again.
Oh, nice.
And I love my vintage art and my vintage floral art. So I'd love to sort of get stuck into maybe painting my own at some point, and I have sort of made a few inroads into sort of doing a couple of classes. So yes, I like being creative. You know, as I always say, I'm not, and I have to keep sort of reiterating this, because I'm not, I always feel that my Instagram is about coming along with me and trying these things with me. I'm certainly not pretending that I'm the best baker, painter, upcycler, you know, but I feel that when I moved here, it was all about having a go at and trying things and trying my hand out at things, and some things were successes and some things were dreadful disasters. But it was so lovely to find the things that brought me joy. And through Instagram, I found other people who would say, oh yes, I tried this, why don't you try it this way? And that's what it's all about for me. It's about sort of, you know, living joyfully, but actually saying to people that, you know, this is me in the garden, but you know, we can all do this. You know, a lot of my crockery is sort of, you know, cost pennies, because it's a lot of it is vintage. You know, there's a mix of new and vintage, but living life as beautifully as you can doesn't have to cost the earth. You know, it doesn't have to mean spending lots of money. But yes, I'm all for sort of just encouraging people to have a go, try their hand at things, and you know, try and make life pretty.
And are there people that you particularly, you talk about being influenced by sort of traditional English decorators like Nancy Lancaster and John Fowler?
Yes,
is that, if you were going to be born again, is that the era that you would wish to be born into?
Decorating wise, yes. It's interesting. I do a lot. We go to Goodwood Revival, which is sort of like the vintage car racing at Goodwood. And there is a sort of tagline that goes along with the fashion, the revive and thrive side, which is vintage style, not vintage values. And I often have to be very careful here because, you know, the basic thing is I'm a black woman living in the English countryside very happily in 2024. In 1934, I may not have had such a, well, I wouldn't have had such a happy experience, perhaps. So as much as I would love to experience that style, I don't want to go back, but I love the essence of the time. I love the fashions. I love the style. I love the quaintness, and I love you know, how things were done and how things were you know, the politeness and all of that. But obviously, there's lots of things about the past that aren't ideal.
Okay, so which is your favourite cake?
Well,
that's my best.
My best. I can make a Victoria sponge if my eyes closed. So that I have learned. That's one thing I will say I am an expert in. The only thing I will claim to be an expert in is a sponge cake. And it will have to have fresh cream and strawberry jam, probably, and lots of fresh fruit.
And how long does it take for the kids to demolish it?
Oh, my goodness. Seconds. Seconds. And I make big cakes because I like them looking as crazy as possible. So, but they can always slice. People always ask me, are my cakes sliceable? Because they're about four tiers at least. And they look as if no one can eat them. But no, they do have a perfect slice to them.
Well, that's... I'm glad we've learned that fact. Paula, thank you so much, and so kind of you to let us come and snoop in your beautiful home. It's been really lovely to have a sit down, have a proper natter.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.